Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Ashley and I will bring you those stories, along with John Russell, Jill Robbins, and Brian Lynn. Later, Pete Musto and John Russell will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, Pakistan's Interior Ministry has ordered Turkish educators reportedly linked to an opposition Turkish clergyman to leave the country by November 20th. The order came on Wednesday, shortly before Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan began an official visit to Islamabad. The teachers work for an education network known as the Pak-Turk International Schools and Colleges. It provides education to over 10,000 students across Pakistan. The group expressed concern about the abrupt decision of the Pakistani government. The Interior Ministry has asked over 400 Turkish citizens to leave the country. A ministry official confirmed to VOA that the Turkish educators were told to leave because their visas were out of date and no longer legal. Before going to Islamabad, President Erdogan praised the Pakistani government's actions against what his government calls the Gulenist terror organization. Fethullah Gulen is an Islamic clergyman from Turkey. He now lives in exile in the American state of Pennsylvania. Gulen is the leader of a movement that operates schools around the world. Erdogan accuses him of trying to take control of the Turkish state, an accusation the clergyman denies. The Pak-Turk schools deny any ties to Gulen or his Hizmet movement. Turkish officials accused the group of plotting to overthrow the government last July. Since the failure of the overthrow attempt, Erdogan has launched a campaign against Gulen's supporters in Turkey. Turkish officials have also urged other countries to close schools that may have links to the cleric, from Nigeria to Cambodia. On Thursday, the Turkish leader praised the Pakistani government for supporting him against the suspected followers of Gulen. Erdogan spoke during a visit to the Parliament building in Islamabad. The Associated Press reported that more than 150 Pak-Turk students demonstrated in the Pakistani capital as Erdogan arrived. Separately, hundreds of students reportedly blocked a main road in the eastern city of Lahore to protest the expulsion orders.
There have been violent incidents in Cameroon this past week. Police have clashed with striking lawyers. More than 1,000 lawyers in English-speaking parts of the country are on strike. They are angry about the widespread use of the French language in the court system. The lawyers are refusing to work until the government acts to reduce the use of French in the courts. The English-speaking lawyers are angry that police used tear gas and force to stop them from peacefully marching in Bamenda, the capital of Northwest Cameroon. Police have also taken action against protesting lawyers in several other towns. Harmony Bogda is a lawyer and was one of the organizers of the protest. He says the lawyers want all French-speaking judges who cannot speak, write, or understand the English language removed from courts in English-speaking areas. Bogda says that people cannot receive justice when court officials are unable to communicate with one another.
We are gentlemen, we are peaceful, and we have never meant any violence. It is now more than a month that we have been on strike after having notified the government about our dissatisfaction with the erosion of the common law.
But the government says it cannot discriminate based on language when filling positions in the court system. Most English-speaking lawyers can communicate in French, but many French-speaking lawyers have trouble communicating in English. Cameroon has two official languages, English and French. About 1 in 5 Cameroonians speak English. The southwest and northwest parts of the country were once under British colonial rule. Cameroon also recognizes two legal systems. One is based on French civil law, while the other is based on English common law. But the striking lawyers say some laws are giving the French system more power. About 20 years ago, Cameroon and 16 other African countries where French is spoken signed a treaty. The agreement is aimed at increasing investment in those nations by making their business laws similar. Cameroon's government says a group is working on making an English language version of the treaty. State media reports that the government has asked the striking lawyers to be patient while the work is completed. But the lawyers want more than just an English version of the treaty. Ashu Nienti researches international law.
They have called for the creation of a separate chamber for common law at the Supreme Court of the country. Since independence in 1960, that court has had only French-speaking chief justices, even though the country is bilingual. They are also asking for the creation of a separate section for common law in the national institution that trains magistrates and judges in the country. The curricula of that school are essentially modeled in the French civil law system, and so the lawyers see that as a problem.
The lawyers' strike is part of what some observers see as a larger problem. Many people are worried that the French language is starting to make English disappear from public life in the country. Cameroon's constitution says the two languages are equal, but many official documents are written only in French. This has caused English-speaking lawyers, lawmakers, and teachers to protest and threaten to strike. I'm John Russell.
A United States government report says hate crimes against Muslims in America rose 67% in 2015. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI, produced the report. It says there were 257 anti-Muslim hate crimes in 2015, compared to 154 in 2014. The number has not been that high since 2001, which saw 481 incidents against Muslims. Many of the incidents followed the September 11th terrorist attacks against the U.S. that year. The FBI report is based on hate crimes recorded by local law enforcement agencies across the United States. Crimes involving religion increased 23% to 1,244, the report said. Jews and Jewish organizations were targeted most in religious-based hate crimes. They represented more than half of all those reported. Hate crimes against Jews rose 9%.
Overall, the number of U.S. hate crimes rose from 5,479 in 2014 to 5,850 last year, an almost 7% increase. The FBI said 18 victims were murdered and 13 raped. About 41% of hate crimes involved threatening behavior, while 60% of victims were assaulted. The largest group of victims, 59%, were targeted because of their race or ethnicity, the report says. About 52% of these hate crimes were done because of anti-black bias. More than 18% were victims of anti-white bias, while 9% were anti-Hispanic or Latino crimes. About 3% resulted from either anti-Asian or anti-American Indian bias, while 1% involved anti-Arab crimes. The FBI report says 48% of the violators were white and 24% were black. Nearly 18% of reported hate crimes was based on the sexual orientation of victims. Of the 1,263 victims, 62% of incidents involved anti-gay bias against men.
The report found that about 2% of hate crime victims were targeted because of gender identity bias. About 1% of victims faced disability bias, while 0.4% were targeted because of gender bias. There have been reports of a rise in hate-related incidents following Donald Trump's victory last week in the U.S. presidential election. The not-for-profit Southern Poverty Law Center, or SPLC, said it received more than 400 reports of hate-motivated incidents over the past week. It said most of the incidents involved hateful intimidation of victims. The reports were gathered from news reports, social media, and people contacting the SPLC directly. Most of the intimidation was directed at immigrants, according to the SPLC's website. This was followed by threats against African Americans, members of the LGBT community, and Muslims. The Washington-based Council on American Islamic Relations, or CAIR, also said it had received reports of hate-related incidents involving Muslims.
In one incident in Columbus, Ohio, a man at a traffic stop made threats against a woman wearing a hijab. In Michigan, a man threatened to set a Muslim woman on fire unless she took off her hijab. Donald Trump appeared Sunday night on the CBS News program 60 Minutes. The president-elect spoke about reports that some of his supporters had used hate speech against others. "I am so saddened to hear that," Trump said. "And I say, stop it. If it helps, I will say this, and I will say right to the cameras, stop it." Some Muslim rights groups welcomed Trump's statement. But they also have called for the president-elect to expand on this message. They have asked that he clearly show supporters he does not approve of hateful behavior. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
Police shootings of African Americans across the United States have directed many people's attention on racial inequality in American society. A new documentary film aimed mainly at young people attempts to open public debate on the issue. The documentary is called I'm Not Racist, Am I? It follows 12 New York City high school students over 9 months. The young people take part in exercises and sometimes difficult discussions concerning the issue of racism. The film is not playing in theaters. It is being shown only to groups of young people and their parents. Catherine Wigington Green is the film's director. She says the parents often find the documentary difficult to watch. She says what it shows is very different from what many adults think is happening in their children's lives. Green said the parents are seeing that children are going to dances or have friends of different races, and they think, oh, well, they just have it all figured out. But she noted, what we realized in making the film is that the children don't, and they are not talking about it with their families. I'm Not Racist, Am I? Has been shown many times at Woodrow Wilson High School, a large, culturally mixed public school in Washington, D.C. The school's principal, Kimberly Martins, says her students needed it.
From the first day that I was in this school, I could not believe that there are classrooms that are all African American or all Latino, and then there are classrooms that are all white.
Student James Sorokin agreed that a diverse school population does not necessarily mean students of different races mix. He added, I think that honestly, white kids hang out with white kids and black kids hang out with black kids generally. The film persuaded another student, Amilcar Hudson. He now thinks that talking about racial issues is the best way to deal with them. But he believes such discussion is not easy. I think that's the scariest part about it, he said. I know there's a racial problem in this country, but the fact that people really don't feel comfortable talking about it means that we are almost self-consciously satisfied with it. We're okay with this going on. Student Isabel Suarez says the situation is more difficult for victims of prejudice.
I understand it's so hard to hear that you are inherently racist because of something you can't control, but isn't it worse to hear that you are less than people inherently because of the color of your skin?
Students at Wilson High have formed a group called Common Ground. It is designed to support interaction and communication among students of different cultural backgrounds.
The film Casablanca is one of the most famous American movies of all time. At the end of the film, the actor Humphrey Bogart says a heartbreaking farewell to the woman he loves.
But what about us?
We'll always have Paris.
Besides affecting one's emotions, this movie scene can teach you a lot about English grammar. It can show you how English speakers use adverbs in a sentence. In our program today, we explore a single word, always. We will discover why Bogart said his famous line the way he did. Do not worry. Unlike the ending of Casablanca, we will not leave you in tears.
In other everyday grammar stories, we explored adverbs. Adverbs are words that change the meaning of a verb, adjective, or sentence. They are often used to show time, place, or a way of doing things. Adverbs are often movable. They can appear at the beginning, middle, or end of a sentence. Consider these examples.
Occasionally, I eat seafood. I occasionally eat seafood. I eat seafood occasionally.
In this example, the adverb occasionally appears in three different places in the sentence. The placement of the adverb does not change the meaning. All three sentences have the same meaning. Most English speakers would not think it strange if you used any one of these sentences.
What about the adverb always? In general, the adverb always is not as movable as other kinds of adverbs, like the word occasionally. You will not often hear an English speaker use always at the beginning or the end of a sentence. Most often, you will hear always in the middle of the sentence, before the verb it is modifying. In some cases, you might hear it at the beginning of a sentence, when giving an order or command, for example. Or you might hear it at the end of a sentence, but usually only in an artistic setting, a poetry reading or a musical performance, for example. But the central point is this. In speaking and in writing, always does not move its position
as often as other adverbs. So, if you were to take our example sentence, I eat seafood, and use the adverb always, you could say, I always eat seafood. Always generally is found after be verbs and auxiliary verbs, but before other verbs. You will find this structure in many popular films. Consider this famous line from A Streetcar Named Desire.
Whoever you are, I've always depended on the kindness of strangers.
In the example, always appears after the auxiliary verb have and just before the main verb depended. This same idea is true of Bogart's famous line from Casablanca, "We'll always have Paris." We'll is a short way to say we will. Always appears after the auxiliary verb will and before the main verb have.
You might think that our story about the word always ends here, but it does not. English speakers can also change the meaning of always. When you hear or read the adverb always in its usual position, before the verb it is modifying, it generally has the meaning of habitually. However, sometimes you will hear English speakers emphasize the word always. In this case, the meaning of the sentence has changed. Think back to our example sentence.
I always eat seafood.
This sentence means that you usually eat seafood, perhaps when you go to a restaurant. If the speaker says,
I always eat seafood,
with the emphasis on the word always, then the speaker is expressing annoyance. Perhaps the speaker is angry that another person, a close friend, for example, did not remember they like to eat seafood when they go out to dinner. Here is another example. You hear a child say,
My father always works late on Thursdays.
This sentence uses the adverb always to express a habitual or common action. However, if you hear the child say,
My dad always works late on Thursdays,
then you know that the child is unhappy with the father's work schedule.
So now you know that if Bogart had used the emphasized always in the film Casablanca, the ending of the film would have been very different. The next time you are listening or speaking, try to pay attention to the placement of the word always. Then, try to identify if it is emphasized or not. This will help you understand the speaker's feelings. Remember, English does not always communicate meaning through grammar. Emphasis plays an important role in showing the meaning of a sentence. With practice, you too will be able to use always like a native speaker. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.